You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.
How's it going, Los Angeles? It's The Startup with Monique Leray. I'm Monique Leray. Welcome back. We are counting down. We only have a few more shows this year. I can't believe it is going to be the year of 2025. But boy, what a year. As you guys can see, I'm setting up my new office. So I've been promising it for so long. So maybe actually in 2026, I'll actually get a real cool background. I'm working on it. We can only do so many things, folks. I want to remind entrepreneurs that watch and listen to The Startup to give yourself a break, give yourself an off-ramp, and just know you can only do so much. You know, thank you for everyone that's been checking in the reins in multiple counties. I've been across all three or four counties in Southern California in the last 24 hours. And the rain was heavier in the valley. I was shout out to Sheila, Captain Sheila Kelleher Bacow, just retired from the Los Angeles County Fire Department. One of my best friends, my emergency contact number for 30 years and one of my besties. And so proud of how she was able to move through the fires. And yes, you know, be careful, guys, in certain areas in LA and the valley, because of the fires, there might be landslides. So just check your local updates and, you know, stay home, you know, make it an Uber Eats kind of day, or stay home and cook and just be cognizant that, you know, there's cause and effect for these things. But shout out to Sheila and all of our friends. And today, speaking of a startup owner that doesn't quit, Michael, and you got to say it right, Bedenbaugh, author of Reviving Our Republic, is here with us again. Michael, Mike, how are you? Mike or Michael? Which one do you prefer?
Mike.
Mike.
Michael is what Mama said when she was mad.
Uh-oh. The full name. They'll give you the whole name with the middle name and then some extra.
Michael. Usually Mike. After something crashed.
I understand. You guys, this is your guide, okay? While it's raining, while it's snowing, while it's flooding, whatever it's doing, get this book for the holidays. It doesn't matter if you're left, right, in the middle, or you don't care, or whatever you are, wherever you are. Reviving Our Republic is based on 95 themes from the future for the future of America, and it's based in history. He's got the receipts, the proof and evidence. I'm going to let him go full screen. Mike Bedenbaugh, Reviving Our Republic author, will go full screen and tell us who you are and what you're up to, Michael. Mike.
All right. Thank you, Monique. Yeah, so it's been an amazing year. I heard you say about 2025. And I've had the book out, Reviving Our Republic, 95 Theses for the Future of America. And I was inspired by two instances to name it that and write that. One, anybody who knows history of the Reformation in Europe, and I'm kind of a history nerd. So, and I grew up in a Lutheran area where Lutheran churches are, and everybody knows the Lutheran church, the Protestant Reformation, was kicked off by Martin Luther, who nailed his 95 theses on the door of the church in Wittenberg to communicate to the Catholic church that was a corrupted 16th century Catholic church that the indulgences and the wrong actions need to stop. And so that's why I use 95 theses, because I think it's a proper metaphor to the issues we're dealing with today in our social life and our political life and how our federal government is so dysfunctional and dealing with indulgences. And also George Washington, our founding president, our most important founding father, who gave a farewell address and basically laid out a maintenance manual when he left office for how to keep our republic. And I took those and realized we've forgotten all of them. And a lot of our problems is because we hadn't listened to those points he made. So I took those points, made 40 policy points in the book that I think will right the ship of state, will make us more governable, will make representatives actually represent us and not a small group of donors and power brokers and corporations, and make the nation work again. I do believe it can do again, but I also believe if we don't do something, we're going to have catastrophic failure. But I'm an optimist, and I know the sun is coming up, and we have to believe that, but we have to act. And I'm hoping this book can be used as a way to go forward.
Yes, 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 yes. Optimism is important to get yourself up. Yes. I love part two, thesis 22, the header. I can't give away all the goodness of this, but I want to get people invested in getting making this a stocking stuffer for the holidays. How do we repair the damage done by modern partisanship?
Yep.
La, 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 la. How do we repair the damage done by modern partisanship? Sure, by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible. And suddenly you are doing the impossible, by Francis of Assisi.
Yeah.
What were you thinking there after you entered into thesis 22?
Well, one of my, you know, I've been fortunate and blessed. I have a lot of different experiences with a lot of amazing people in my life. I'm kind of like the Forrest Gump feather, you know, that just bounced around with all the different experiences. And I bring all those experiences to the book. And one of those that actually inspired me to get the book written last year was when I ran as an independent congressional candidate in the reddest district in the country. And this is the district that elevated Lindsey Graham. Okay. And so I just saw how the poisonous aspect of the team spirit that has coagulated around partisanship and how political parties have basically communicated this sense that you either follow us or you're going off a cliff. So you have to follow us. And we have to break that. And Washington warned us about that. And he had so many amazing quotes where he understood that the partisanship is something that will destroy this nation if it's not kept in check. And one of the biggest, he never said this, but I believe it. I've read everything Washington's written. I just love studying this man, all his quirks, foibles, and failures. Yeah. But he was brilliant when it came to political insight. And one thing I believe he regretted was that they didn't deal with party structure in the Constitution, because they never really had it. When they created the Constitution, everybody was unified after winning the Revolution. That's all they knew. Win the Revolution, we're all on the same team. But then after 8 years of him being in presidency, he saw how partisanship was dividing the nation in a deadly way. And that's one of the main things he talked about in his farewell address, that has to be kept in check or to our detriment if it's not. And I'm afraid we're at a point where it is as poisonous now as it's ever been in our nation, probably since the Civil War.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I think there is there has to be a recognition. We're in something here. You know, if you're an entrepreneur or someone just, you know, working to pay your bills, take care of your family, and you're not really necessarily considered a political person, or you don't really care about this, or maybe you're not so deep in history, you know, you understand the basics of things, and you're just busy paying your bills and taking care of your family. These things can get away from you. And when you're an entrepreneur, the reason why we're talking about this on the show is because, unfortunately, sometimes, unfortunately, I guess, depending on your perspective, these things touch, you know, the taxes that are happening, the import export things for startups. You know, I've seen people on TikTok and everywhere crying about, you know, they're going down to Long Beach to get their things and they got to pay thousands of dollars and they don't understand tariffs. You know, they think that, that they've been told what tariffs are, but they don't really understand until they're actually dealing with them. And it affects the entrepreneur when it's incoming. So could you speak a little bit about that, just in a way where people can just plainly understand tariffs and why these policies are affecting and touching entrepreneurs?
Yeah, well, I consider myself an entrepreneur. Even though I served in the U.S. Navy, I ran a promotional merchandise company. I had an office out in Los Angeles in Encino, where we catered to the film industry and promoted movies for Paramount and DreamWorks, and they were our large clients. And we imported stuff all the time. And then after that, I went into the nonprofit sector, but I treated it as an entrepreneur thing where we would invest in properties and rehabilitate them and put them back out in the marketplace, historic buildings. So I would say anybody that considers themselves an entrepreneur and wanting to invest in their community or into their life and make their lives better, the days of jobbing out and assuming the government will take care of itself is over. We have lived a very blessed life the past 40 years when America at its peak was churning and, you know, we had the greatest, best quality of life. We had the greatest economy the world had ever seen. But that happened in a way that we have to start now taking responsibility for it, because we have to realize we can't just job that out to representatives within the system we have now, because the system isn't rewarding people to represent us. The system's rewarding people to be sycophantic salesmen for corporations and donor interests that are outside the district. My Republican opposition in the race, and we were very, like I said, the reddest district, she raised $900,000 just to run for the district.
Wow.
And she only spent maybe barely half of that. Everything else is going into a war chest. And the vast majority of that extra money came from outside sources. So there's special interests pouring money in to make sure that their people are in Congress, making sure their items and their ability to make money is taken care of. And we're losing the ability to represent ourselves the way we should.
Yeah.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're investing in yourself, you're also investing in the nation, but because you expect the nation to be safe, the streets safe, you can have commerce, and goods aren't going to be stolen off the back of the truck. Those certain things, we need a safe society.
That's right.
And our society's getting ready to start breaking down, so we got to start taking responsibility for it.
You really hit something on the head there, and I remember Elizabeth Warren touching on those things where, you know, we had roads that were safe to create certain companies, I won't name them, to be able to be successful, you know, and ship items and pieces and manufacture and then they write off their costs. And listen, hey, if there's a code and you are within your tax code and you're doing that, I think that's okay because it's legal. But we want to reimagine and revisit these things where we are giving you a safe place to become wealthy. And that's a beautiful thing. I do believe everyone should pay their way, and everyone has the right to feel differently. And what you're saying is true. We have to be we can't be in the weeds here about what it is, you know, and it doesn't mean we have to besmirch anyone, but I believe that paying our way and still creating a lane for entrepreneurs, we can get it back. You know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s and, you know, seeing different brands and tasting different flavors and coming from Southern California, you know, like, you know, even just like the soy sauce, Kikkoman, you know, or just the things like that. Like, and then you go across the seas and you see the same brands, you feel kismet, you feel kind of connected to those people, like from food, like Anthony Bourdain had it right. Like having a conversation around the table with people from all over the world, you know, it draws you to connections, you know, and you find out we all want the same things. Basically the basic things we want the same.
We all love our children. We all want to be safe in a place where they can grow up safe. And that's the grand unifier. And all this other stuff is noise. But it's also the responsibility of ourselves to realize that, you know, about the tax issue, you know, Washington had several main themes he had in his farewell address, and I use them, and one of them is fiscal responsibility. And he makes clear taxes are not comfortable, but you can't have certain, you know, to be in a society, you have to have revenue to pay for things like a military and other things the federal government does. And in order for that, you have to have revenue. Now, here's a little juxtaposition that a lot of people, especially on the conservative side, tend to miss. when they keep saying we must lower taxes, must lower taxes. We must treat government like a business.
Let's go full screen so we can get this really good soundbite from Mike.
So, oh, thank you, Monique. So the issue is, if you want to have, what is the purpose of a business? You want government to act like a business. What is the purpose of business? Is to make revenue. Well, so it's not just about running efficiently, because honestly, a lot of businesses don't run that efficiently. If they can make revenue, they make the best they can. I've ran several businesses, and I've seen a lot of folks trying to start businesses, and they fail. It takes a very special set of skills to make a business work. But one thing businesses have to have, they have to have revenue. And if the federal government is to be a business, it's got to have revenue to pay for the services that it then outputs. And we have to remember that. And we have to remember that, you know, just because people that voted for you maybe won't lower taxes, but when you get in a position, the people, when you're representing a district, 750,000 people, your constituency isn't just the people that voted for you that might have said, we won't lower taxes. Your constituency is everybody in that district, and you have a responsibility to everybody in that district. And unfortunately, over the past 20 years, we've started to slip away from that principle of who constituency is. And I see it on talking points, people saying, well, the Democratic constituency is if only Democrats vote for them, and those are the only ones they answer to. We have to break away from that, and we have to realize there's responsibility in living in a safe society, and there's a balance on figuring out what is a proper amount of income to go in to help fund what we need. And now we have to fund a national debt that is bigger to GDP than we had even during after World War II, when we were the world economic power with a manufacturing base that could pay our ways out of it. We don't have that anymore. So we have to start taking responsibility and looking at how we're going to get ourselves out of this fiscal potential car wreck we're about to be in.
Yes, I agree. I think also, why don't we just address the thank you for talking about the taxes, because, you know, those young entrepreneurs, we don't want you to be discouraged. Like anything in life, like anything in business. And unfortunately, now we're going through some growing pains. We're going through some learning. We're yielding to our poor choices, perhaps, in some areas. But that's not to say all is lost. If you lean into Mike's book, Reviving Our Republic, 95 themes, okay? 95 themes for the future. He's talking about the future of America, okay? Everything that's happening now is old energy. It's a manifestation of old energy. We're talking about new energy now. So we don't give up. If you're an entrepreneur, you have to have grit. It's not easy. It is not easy. But what's even less easy and even more disturbing is sitting by, idly by, and not arming yourself and educating yourself about the past, because it will repeat itself if we aren't doing better, right? Yes. So I want to talk to Mike right now about, and when you're in this book, you guys will understand, how should we ensure these foreign mischiefs are minimized? The strong do what they can and the weak suffer what they must. To be powerful, one must be willing to wield that power with justice and integrity. And that's Thaddeus. Did I say it right?
I think so, yes.
Tell me.
You did a good job.
Thank you. Tell me about, wow, it's been a while. I went back to MBA school, you know, a year and a half ago, and I haven't done my history brush up, but I'm forced to really lean in right now. What were you thinking when, right? That's the prequel to Thesis 61 in your book. Where was your head at here in your war chest of history? And where were you taking us when you posed this question in chapter, I believe it's chapter 6?
Yeah, how should we ensure these foreign mischiefs are minimized? Well, the foreign mischiefs I'm talking about is the way we have engaged in the world as a power player and not as an equal partner. And one of the things Washington warned us about was engaging too much with one power versus another and how it could be to our detriment. Now, we have to remember the world Washington lived in. We were just a very, in the scheme of things, we were a very primitive society compared to what Western Europe was at the time. Western Europe, regionally, was the most powerful region on Earth, other than China. But, you know, I mean, our head, our president, still lived in a wooden house where the wood was carved to look like stone. In England, they were stone. So they really looked at us as provincials. But he was sitting here looking at the fact that we could be really hurt by the great powers in Europe between France or England. And he said, we cannot side with one at the detriment, because if you side with one, you become the enemy of the other. And you have to really be careful. So in the book, I call for a status of neutrality. Now, I want to be clear, and I have to go through this with a lot of folks. Many people tend to see that as being an isolationist. Mike, you want us to be an isolationist. You know that doesn't work. That is not what I'm saying. Because you can engage in the world, you can partake relationships in the world, you can open up areas, clean areas for commerce without having to take the military side of different groups in countries or countries against another. Because what happens is when you try to engage like that, what you're doing is isolating yourself from the rest of the world that may see those countries as enemies.
Can I jump in here? Because yes. I really love this point. You guys, if you guys have ever taken any higher education course, even if you haven't, even if you've led a team, I've worked at McDonald's when I was younger, even if you led a team in a fast food restaurant or anywhere, if you just worked as a part of a team, you see the leadership skills that are put out, right? You've got your schedule, you've got people running payroll, you've got people running all the duties that keep the things functioning, okay? So Mike is touching on things that are leadership roles and how you're supposed to position yourself in the world. It's not uncommon to take a neutral stance so that you can keep things going. It doesn't mean that you don't have an opinion, but it's about keeping things flowing and neutral. Can you expound on this, Mike, from like a leadership role way? Like, how should it look like? Because it sounds really like Macron comes to mind, and I hope that doesn't neutralize anyone or, you know, if that's, well, but it comes to mind. But I'll go full screen and let you explain.
No, I'll tell you a good example of what proper neutrality looks like and how it could give us power to make the world better. Theodore Roosevelt was famous for his, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick. He was the one that first created a huge navy so we could project power and defend ourselves. But in doing that, he also was able to be a player on the world stage. And he actually won the Nobel Peace Prize for stopping the Russian-Japanese War that had been occurring in the turn of the century. The Russo-Japanese War was a devastating war that had been going on in eastern Russia and around Japan. And Roosevelt was able to broker a peace around that and got the Nobel Prize for it. Another one, now, is with Jimmy Carter. Now, a lot of people can fault Jimmy Carter on a lot of things. He was a very sweet, wonderful man. But he did have his problems of controlling some of the issues, especially with the hostages in Iran and some of the tragedies that happened with the rescue. However, Jimmy Carter knew how to get Menachem Begin in Israel and Anwar Sadat in Egypt that had just been at full-blown war where Egypt was trying to wipe out Israel 4 years before, was able to get them at Camp David and create a peace that is still holding 50 years later. I mean, think about that. With all the devastating things happening in the Middle East right now, Israel and Egypt are not fighting each other because of what Jimmy Carter was able to do, because he was able to get in the room with both these people and show respect for them. That's how that looks. And we can be so much more powerful in the world if we quit assuming that if we go into a conflict like our administrations did going into Iraq. If you remember, when we were when the leadership thought Anwar thought Saddam Hussein was the worst tyrant in the world, and we needed to get rid of him. And I even heard leadership in the Bush administration say, we need to find the George Washington there, or what they did in Afghanistan, which shows a terrible ignorance of the culture, of the history. You know, every nation has their own trajectory of their own development, their own challenges, their own history, and they have to adapt to those in a way that their people can thrive in the balance of time and culture and outlook. People need to have their own space to grow into who they need to be. And we need to stay out of their way and not presume evil is involved in that. One of the biggest things I'm concerned about is how we're treating Iran right now.
Finish that thought. I'm sorry.
Well, the vast majority of people in Iran were born after the revolution. They are dying to have reforms and have a more open society. And the more we treat Iran as an enemy and treat the whole nation just because of the current leadership, we will create a permanent enemy even among the young people there. We have to be careful with this, and we have to assume the hope of those folks to reform like Russia almost did in 1990.
Yeah, you're bringing back so many memories, and I do agree. I think with travel comes this wisdom, in addition to you studying and being a historian and respectfully an author now, a successful author, you guys. Let's get him on the New York best-selling list, guys, okay? Reviving the Republic with Michael Benenbaum. He is doing the work of the people, and he's doing it in a way that's classy and looking to inspire our better angels. Wherever you sit on the aisle, if you even don't sit on an aisle, wherever you voted or didn't vote, it really doesn't matter in this moment. What matters is what you do next. Everything we're seeing now is old energy, right? So I love that you said that, and going to 47 countries during the plus 47 plus countries during the pandemic and post-pandemic in 20 cities around the U.S. and talking to people and sitting and sharing meals and breaking bread and going into homes and interviewing people and letting them tell me how they navigated this once in 100 year event. I learned that I didn't know as much as I thought. I was educated in real time about how the world is. And you know what? Having a United States passport, being a Black Cajun Creole woman from Los Angeles, California, with roots in Georgia and roots in Texas, although I know how to move around and change my hair and look the way I need to look and do what I need to do, I showed up as a human being, and I was met mostly by most of those countries as just a human being. And I wasn't always a Black girl, a woman, Black woman, you know. And I think going there, I'm going to circle back to your point, going there and understanding the power that that passport yields in the past, hopefully in the future. Right now, I haven't been overseas in the last few months since May. But my point is, you guys, we have something really beautiful that we created. And the reason why we're strong is because of our partners. The reason why you enjoy the beautiful foods in those cities that you go to, and even in the smaller towns, you look at the back of those bottles, they're made in other countries for a reason, because there was a trade deal made. There was a relationship made. There was a love for that culture that was fortified and forged, you know, between them. And we don't want to lose that. We are stronger together with all countries as much as we can be. We do not want to isolate ourselves. We have to get into the reading, guys. This book is not that long, everybody. Get into it. I want to take us back to part two, if you don't mind, for the last minute. Well, we got 1 minute left, but let's leave them with this. How do we repair the damage done by modern part? Well, we did that one already, didn't we?
Let me just say the several main points of the 95 thesis has 40 policy points that help empower representatives by making smaller districts, by giving term limits, by restricting who can give them money. I think if one of my main points in there is if you're voting for someone, you're the only person, individual, that could give them money for their campaign. No corporations, nobody outside the district. Yeah. Those sort of things, we have to give that accountability. And that's where those 40 policy points. And my hope in this is that it will inspire people to either in Congress and other people to run to help create a fulcrum caucus of using these points going in there, because 10 people in the House of Representatives can control what happens in the House of Representatives. Yeah. My goal is to have that fulcrum caucus to where those 10 people can say, you want this? We have to have term limits.
Let's show that shirt. Let's get back to Washington's view of it. Look at that, you guys. Do better. We have to do better, folks. You know what? You're wearing that jacket. You're eating that beautiful cuisine. You're exploring new things. You're traveling because you want to. And the forefathers want us to do so in a way that represents our greater angels. Michael, Mike. Do not call him Michael because you're not his mother. Call him Mike Dedenball, the author and soon-to-be New York best-selling author, Reviving Our Republic. Mike, tell us where we can find you next. What do you have next? And you got about 10 seconds.
Well, you can find the book on my webpage, revivingourrepublic.com, or at Amazon. Gotten a lot of great reviews. And I'm going to be touring and doing a book tour at several bookstores here and in Washington, D.C. Monique, you're awesome. Thank you for spreading.
You're awesome. Thank you for leaning in and being a hero that's speaking from truth, receipts, and knowledge. And that's all we have to go on, but we're going to do it. And Project 2026 by Mike Dedenball is coming up soon, guys. So stay tuned. He'll be back with us really soon.
Got it.
Well, we start up today. See you guys next weekend. Be well. Be
safe.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.